good Friday evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome, welcome. Glad you could make it. We very seldom have guests on this program, but coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk for a few minutes with Bill Press. He has a new book out, The Obama Hate Machine. Subtitles, The Lies, Distortions, and Personal Attacks on the President and Who is Behind Them. So Bill will be joining us. Also tonight, podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to the Molloy Program podcast to download commercial free. What else we got? can you adjust my mic a little bit here? I've got too much bass, not enough treble. Thank you very much. There we go. A little shop talk. Sorry about that. We were so busy tonight with the Girl Scout cookie thing. Speaking of that, we have a commercial we're going to play for you in a couple of minutes that you either are going to like or you're going to freak out, one of the two. This hour is sponsored by Alice in Arkansas. Bless her heart. Heal and hollers, Alice. Here's her message. 48 years ago today, Bob Dylan released the album, The Times They Are A-Changin'. Listening to it today, it seems that nothing has changed. Read the words of Only a Pawn in Their Game. It's the 2012 Republican Party race baiting described perfectly. And then read the words to The Ballad of Hollis Brown, or The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, or With God on Our Side. What a great album. What a depressing picture. Send cookies. Alice in Arkansas. Alice at Heal and Hollers. No, this is not a commercial message, it's sponsorship, but I got to tell you, you know, we have gone through jar after jar of that shea, what is it called, Kathy? The shea?
Mint shea butter.
Mint shea butter. And the other one, the hemp cream, the
lemon
hemp cream. Whew. That stuff is so good. Anyway, thanks, Alice. Helen Hollers. Go to our website and you'll see her, her little banner ad up there. The only full sponsor at CPAC is Google. Malachi in Saskatoon sent that to me. He says, so much for their motto, do no evil. Down in the depths of the Conservative Political Action Conference are the booths showcasing the sponsors, co-sponsors, and exhibitors in perhaps the most prominent position, just to the left as you enter the exhibit hall after taking the escalator down, is Google's booth! Do no evil, huh? The booth, according to Crooks and Liars, the booth sits next to Newsmax Media. There's a collection of sick sons of bitches. Across from the Heritage Foundation, an organization put together by right-wingers not that long ago that wants to gut America before destroying it. And just to the right of Google is a Tea Party booth, psychopaths all. And to get to Google's booth, you have to walk by a large display put up by another sponsor, the National Rifle Association. Google is the only major American corporation that paid the $20,000 fee to be full sponsors. So the Crooks and Liars person went up to the Google booth and, this morning and asked a guy there named Zachary Uremian, Why Google had chosen to sponsor CPAC instead of just buying a, you know, something less expensive like a co-sponsor or exhibitor booth. Zachary Uremian said, I wasn't part of the process. We have no idea. Uremian said the booth was being used to show conference attendees how to use Google. Plus, and also to promote their new election page, google.com/elections. Uremian, the guy that talked to the CNL writer, was careful not to get too far into the possible public relations issues Google's presence of CPAC might cause. Uremian said, quote, we're not trying to advocate for anything. We're just here to promote Google.com/elections and Google Plus. There were only a few other major corporations that sponsored booths at CPAC. Koch Industries and Altria. That's the holding company that owns the franchise on lung cancer, bladder cancer, colon cancer, stomach cancer, you know, the cigarette maker, Altria. Who else was there? They were listed as specialty sponsors. Well, yeah, when you're peddling death, of course you're a specialty sponsor. AOL was there. Microsoft / Election Mall had bought a $5,000 co-sponsorship. Let me see, who else? The majority of the other sponsors at this massive circle jerk of psychopaths that's going on right now, were all attending CPAC to push their ideological issues or companies. Co-sponsors included Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform. You sorry bastard. Christians United for Israel. Yeah, until Jesus comes back and then you're going to murder all the Jews. We know, we know. Freedom Works. That's that filthy dunghole put together by, what's his name, the former Republican congressman from Texas. The American Petroleum Institute. Why, of course they would be there. Tea Party Patriots were a bunch of skunk, a combination of skunk and rabbit, a hybrid little creature, skunk and rabbit. That would be the Tea Party Patriots. And the New York Conservative Party. Oh, my God. This is interesting. The writer said, I was surprised to see a booth back there advocating for the elimination of crony capitalism. I asked the two women standing behind it how they funded it. They said they received a grant from Koch Industries. How to defund the elimination of crony capitalism funded by the Koch brothers. The Western Center for Journalism tried to recruit me to write stories the liberal media tries to cover up. Like what? I asked. The writer asked. One of the staffers said, well, the Obama subpoenas. apparently, the woman is referring to a story about a judge here in Georgia, not really a judge, he's some kind of a magistrate, who refused to throw out a subpoena asking or demanding that Obama appear at a birther trial put together by the that crazed Zionist Mossad member. What's her name? Orly Tates. Oh, God. You know, you got to wonder why Google would do this. Why if you have a company like Google, why would you want to surround your well-respected brand with nuts and psychopaths like these? You know, ones that say Obama's a Muslim, Obama's not an American, he's a Kenyan, Obama wants to take away your guns, Obama's a socialist, Obama promotes religious bigotry. Shame on you, Google. Actually, shame on any American corporation that would sponsor this filthy gathering of thugs. And that's easy for me to say because just about every American corporation would you know, fight each other to get in there if there was some way that they could hide the fact that they were sponsoring it. Because even though capitalist America loves these morons, when they will spend hours, days, weeks talking about prescription drug plan, about birth control pills and health insurance, and not cover the real issues. Astonishing. And by the way, we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. I can't, I'm fascinated by that whole issue. Oh, and Obama issued a statement today with a compromise. There's a surprise, right?
And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing. Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call.
entering a flying monkey free zone. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Where were we? Oh, yeah, the great Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin. Have you heard about this? Yesterday, we're going to talk about this tonight, too. Yesterday, 49 states joined the federal government. The only state that didn't was Oklahoma. And the attorney general there said, I don't see any reason to fine the banks anything. 49 states joined the feds in announcing a $26 billion settlement with five of the biggest banks in the country over their foreclosure fraud abuses. $26 billion, which is a rounding error to these bastards. the amount of American net worth that was lost because of these banks is somewhere in, if not the hundreds of billions, in the trillions. So a stinking $26 billion, right? Settlement. Now, the money from the settlement is supposed to aid homeowners who lost their homes to foreclosure or who find themselves underwater. And it's a joke. The amount of money that each of several hundred thousand out of millions of homeowners, only a couple hundred thousand will qualify, apparently, the max they're going to get is $2,000. Some of these people are in homeless shelters. Some of them are living with friends. Some of them have rented apartments. $2,000. However, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, Republican, whose high-profile assault on workers' rights has resulted in what's going to be a very successful recall effort against this punk, Scott Walker isn't planning to use the money to help homeowners. Well, hell no. Why should he, right? Under the terms of the settlement, Wisconsin is set to receive $140 million, $31 million of which comes directly to the state government. And Walker is planning to use that money to help balance his state's budget. Now, I can't understand this. Of the $31 million payment coming directly to the state government, most of the money, $25 million, will go to help close a budget shortfall revealed in a newly released state projection. Wisconsin Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, whose office said he has legal authority over the money, made the decision in consultation with Walker. So it's not just the governor. It's also this thieving, lying attorney general. Scott Walker said, quote, just like communities and individuals have been affected, the foreclosure crisis has had an effect on the state of Wisconsin in terms of unemployment. This will offset that damage done to the state of Wisconsin, end quote. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who's a Democrat, criticized Walker's move, saying not one dime of the settlement should be used to fund the unbalanced state budget. Now, adding insult to injury, of course, Governor Walker has previously criticized using one-time settlement money to fill budget holes. Well, of course. Every Republican office holder is a liar. Every Republican office holder is a crook. Every Republican office holder is a hypocrite. They say this and do a 180. When their actions come to it, it's the exact opposite. It's like a game with these sons of bitches. It's a complete game. I'll say this and do that, just the opposite. And in the process, you may get whiplash, but I don't care. I am a Republican politician. I'll say anything. I'll be Newt Gingrich and rail on about Bill Clinton's infidelities while I'm boinking an intern myself. I mean, it never stops, right? But this is, I mean, if you are a homeowner in Wisconsin and you were expecting to get your $2,000, Scott Walker is going to put it in, so to speak, in his pocket. And you know what? There's not a damn thing you can do about it. Too bad, Wisconsinites. You put the son of a bitch in office. Huh? He's really going to turn things around, right? Get rid of that there Obamacare and all that other stuff, right? Oh, yeah. Well, not only did you Wisconsinites get screwed by these predatory capitalist bankers, they signed a settlement of chump change to get you off their backs, and now your governor is stealing the money. He's stealing the money. What are you going to do about it? Well, you got a recall petition. The names are being counted to see if there's enough to put this son of a bitch back on a ballot and get rid of him. You folks in Wisconsin may want to be aware of what the guy's doing. Are you going to let him continue to steal? He is a lying, thieving Republican. He is a hypocrite. He is a liar. Are you going to just sit there and not throw him out of office? We'll watch and report. Trust me.
The politician's game as he rises to fame, and the poor white remains on the caboose of the train, so it ain't him to blame. He's only a pawn in that game. The deputy sheriffs, the soldiers, the governors get paid, and the marshals and cops get the same. In the hands of them all like a tool. He's taught in his school from the start by the rule that the laws are with him to protect his white skin. To
end your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Well, where's press? He didn't call in? Okay, well, I don't know. Maybe he got the time screwed up. I have no idea. If he calls in tonight, we'll put him on. Bill Press, author of the new book, The Obama Hate Machine, The Lies, Distortions, and Personal Attacks on the President, and Who is Behind Them. All right. And this hour is sponsored by Alice in Arkansas over at Helin Hollers, Alice. And her message is so nostalgic, so poignant. 48 years ago today, Bob Dylan released the album, The Times They Are A-Changin'. Listening to it today, it seems that nothing has changed. Read the words of Only a Pawn in Their Game. It's the 2012 Republican Party race baiting described perfectly. And then read the words to The Ballad of Hollis Brown, or The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, or With God on Our Side. What a great album. What a depressing picture. Send cookies. Oh, my God. Alice in Arkansas. Bless her heart. Wait a minute, who's this? Is this Bill Press?
Hey, Mike Malloy, how you doing?
I thought maybe you missed the train.
I know, Washington, we're always late for everything.
Yeah, have you attended the CPAC thing?
Oh, God, no. I wouldn't go near that mess.
Bill...
It is like the circus coming to town, though, I got to tell you.
It is that. I got an invitation about 5 years ago when I was still at Air America, and I didn't know who the invitation was from. I thought it was a joke, and it was some woman who set up invitations to invite people to, you know, just come and be there, I guess. And I wrote back with a liberal use of the F word,
uh-huh.
because I didn't know who she was or whatever. And, you know, my point was, how dare you invite me to a collection of geeks like this and people who want to overthrow the government and blah, blah, blah. Well, I think every executive at Air America got a letter. How dare you have this man? But that's not why you called. Your book.
But you know, they have this Radio Row there too. You know, Tom Hartman used to go and do their Radio Row from there.
Yeah, I know. I used to listen to him. It was kind of fun listening to Hartman gut some of these people. It was like back in the day when I used to go carp fishing up in Ohio. You know, and you bring in these great big carp and cut them open. And that's what Hartman was doing to these Republicans. So it was very interesting.
How are you? I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know. It's been a while. I think the last time was out in Seattle.
God, that long ago. We got to hang out.
At some point. Yeah. I may be in D.C. to cover the Supreme Court hearing on the Affordable Care Act. I think it's in March, right, Kathy? I think it's in March. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be there, so we'll get together.
No, if you're coming up, come on by. I mean, you can use our studio or just...
They have a setup there, so they have some kind of Radio Row, but thanks. But I want to talk a little bit about your book, The Obama Hate Machine. This, you know, I've never seen anything like what has happened with this president. I attribute a lot of it to just flat-out racism. What do you attribute it to?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it's like, you know, first of all, we haven't seen any president, I don't think, who's been, had so many personal, ugly, you know, direct attacks since maybe Abraham Lincoln when he was alive. He became a saint. He became a saint only after he was assassinated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is racism. I call it in the book the othering of Obama. You know, they always try to paint him as somebody who's not like you and me.
Right.
And that's for a lot of reasons. Well, you know, he was born in Hawaii, not in mainland America. He grew up in Indonesia and, you know, and his parents, mixed race parents and everything. But a lot of it is because he's black, you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
And, but they, you know, I'm sure you've seen it too. These guys just get unhinged when they're talking about Obama. You know, it's like Sean Hannity this week saying that Obama didn't want to go get Osama bin Laden, and he could prove it because he had a tape that would prove it.
My God.
I mean, they're sick, you know?
Yeah, and it's, they seem to have a bottomless pit of ammunition to go after this president. This latest thing, of course, this insanity over the Affordable Care Act part of birth control provided by insurers. I mean, the way the Catholic Church and the political right has attacked this, I mean, this is madness, Bill.
I'm telling you, don't get me started. I just wrote a column about it, and I've been, you know, look, first of all, I'm a Catholic, okay? At least I was raised a Catholic.
I know that.
I studied for the priesthood for 10 freaking years. Okay?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, I was a seminarian. The bishops, since Paul VI and 1968, they've been trying to preach that birth control, contraception, is evil, it's immoral, it's sinful. Obviously, they haven't made the sale, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, 98% of Catholic women have used birth control at some point. And so, but they're still trying to make this big issue of it, and they go after Obama. I mean, why shouldn't every woman have access to birth control, right?
Sure.
I mean, if men can get Viagra out of their health plan, why can't women get birth control?
Well, and another thing that really irritates me, you know, the fact that it's referred to as birth control, it's pregnancy control.
Yeah.
It is not birth control. One can make an argument that abortion is birth control, but the pill is pregnancy control. And if the meme were changed from birth control to pregnancy control, I'm sure that would not satisfy the right wingers and some of the religious people, but at least it would be more honest.
But you know, and also, it's such. I was there at the White House today when the president caved, actually, and I hated to see it because these bishops, you know, they have such power. It's just unreal on this issue. And most Catholics don't agree with them on this issue. I mean, they're their narrow view of sexuality is so medieval, right? But they made such a big deal. They raised such a fuss, and so the president came up with this compromise today. I just hated to see him give in.
You know? Do you think, having done the research that you had to do for the Obama hate machine, are you convinced that no matter what Obama were to do, if he would have come out there today and said, look, I made a horrible mistake, I'm going to just rescind the whole thing, they would still go after him?
Oh, totally. Oh, totally. And I knew when he did this that this was not going to satisfy the critics, right?
But right.
No way. Which is why I thought he should have stuck to his guns.
You know, another thing...
And I think he was right. Again, the basic issue... And I debated some guy today on this, some nut job from something called the Beckett Institute or something. This was not... They made this a religious liberty. This was not a religious liberty issue. Nobody said you had to change your stupid ideas about sexuality or what your beliefs were. It just said that women had a right to have access to healthcare, right?
Right.
Period.
It never fails to just absolutely stun me. The thing, though, the underlying question to me is this. Obama has been, to me, kind of a Clinton-style president. He certainly has not been a leftist, and it's arguable that he's even, among some people, I don't think he's been a liberal, but a lot of people would maintain that his policies are essentially liberal. But the right wing calls him a socialist. How in the hell can you take a look at Obama's policies over the past 3 years and what he's chosen to pursue or not pursue and call him anything other than very sympathetic to the corporate right in this country? This is the part that's maddening.
I mean, that's exactly it. At best, he is a centrist, okay? And I go into a lot of that in the book.
Right.
I mean, I wish we had single-payer health care, right? We
sure.
don't. We have a health care policy, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, that gives the insurance companies 32 million new customers.
Right, right. So where's the socialism in that?
That's not socialism. With a Wall Street bailout, we could have, right, we could have nationalized the banks. No, we didn't. We gave them... $800 billion.
The only conclusion you can come up with, Bill, is these people on the right are clinically and literally insane. We got to take a break here. We're talking with Bill Press. He is the host of nationally syndicated radio program, The Bill Press Show. He writes a column for Tribune Media Services. And I knew him when I was a child. I used to watch him on CNN's Crossfire and The Spin Room. Okay, not when I was a child. Stick around. We're going to talk some more with Bill Press. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Strange days indeed. Most peculiar, Mama. Everybody's smoking, and no one's getting high. Everybody's flying, and never touch the sky. There's UFOs over New York.
On the air, flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Alice in Arkansas, who owns Heal and Hollers. Her message 48 years ago today, Bob Dylan released the album, The Times Era Changing. Listening to it today, it seems that nothing has changed. Read the words of Only a Pawn in Their Game. It's the 2012 Republican Party race baiting described perfectly. And then read the words to the Ballad of Hollis Brown, or The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, or With God on Our Side. What a great album. What a depressing picture. Send cookies. Allison, Arkansas at Helen Hollers. You can get to our website by going to MikeMalloy.com. We're talking to nationally syndicated radio host Bill Press and syndicated columnist with Tribune Media Services and MSNBC's Buchanan and Press and CNN's Crossfire back in the day when CNN made sense. I used to work there, too, but that was when CNN made some sense. The name of his book, The Obama Hate Machine, subtitled The Lies, Distortions, and Personal Attacks on the President and Who is Behind Them. Other than the Koch brothers and the usual suspects, who did you find in your research, Bill, is really behind this?
Well, first of all, let's not. By the way, a lot of changes at CNN since you and I were there, right?
Oh yeah,
and not for the better.
No,
right?
No.
I would have to argue. Yeah, it's just crazy. Well, let's just start with the Koch brothers. I mean, most people don't know who these guys are. I mean, you know, you hear all about Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, but you don't hear about number three and four on the list of the richest men in America,
mm-hmm.
Charles and David Koch,
right.
Who, unlike Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, have not used their money to do some good things, and particularly, you know, with Gates, he and his wife trying to help, you know, with healthcare in Africa and around the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys have done nothing but pour their money, the Kochs, pour the money into right-wing think tanks and political organizations and the Tea Party. And, just 2 days before my book came out, they held another one of their meetings of their corporate fat cats, pledged $100 million to defeat Obama this year because they say he's bad for business. And these guys are making more money than they ever made in their freaking life.
Than ever. More than ever.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's just crazy. And so one of the things, and I'm not the first one did it, you know, the guys that Think Progress and the
Crooks and Liars,
Common Cause and Code Pink, yep. And others who first exposed them, the Koch brothers. But they've been operating under the radar. Most people, you know, don't know. They think that like the Tea Party was some homegrown organic thing. No, it was paid for by Dick Armey and the Koch brothers.
Sure, absolutely. That's the part that also is infuriating, is the fact that we have a news media, and I'm not talking about programs like yours or mine or Hartman's or somebody, but we have a news media in this country that refuses to just come right out and say it. Now, granted, New York Times finally exposed this guy Adelson, who's he and his wife now have put $10 million, or is it $20 million, into Newt Gingrich's campaign. And then we have this rich psychopath who's backing Santorum. Finally, it seems like the media are starting to say, okay, look, this is getting down to a shootout among billionaires. And people like you and me, Bill, don't have anything to say about it anymore.
No. In fact, I've never, you're right, the media just haven't, that's a whole other part of my book. The media hasn't done their job.
Right.
These guys would not have been able to perpetuate their lies if it weren't for the media acting as a freaking megaphone and not, you know, they don't kick the tires or they don't challenge these guys. They just repeat their lies and goes back to, before, but certainly with Sarah Palin, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're just not doing their job.
The other thing that irritates me, and I'm sure.
And I see it every day at the White House.
Oh yeah,
the White House press corps, right? You know, Santorum or Gingrich or somebody will say something outrageous, and then all the reporters do. They think they're doing their job. They just ask a question about, well, Romney says bop bop bop, so therefore, why shouldn't you cave on this issue?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and it's just nonsense.
It's amazing. And the thing that I'm sure this irritates you also is the attempt by most media outlets now, it seems, to promote this false equivalency. If somebody, you know, if you get a megaphone that says Obama, it was really born in Kenya, media will give that attention as though there's any kind of credibility to that at all. I mean, it just makes me, I don't know, Bill, I want to start breaking things. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, absolutely. In fact, sometimes I find at the White House, someone would ask a question, and I will, you know, like, groan or just, I can't stop myself, right? And I'll just say, oh, get out. You know, I've done that a couple of times. No, it's in the book. I quote Paul McGowan. Paul McGowan calls it the green cheese fallacy, right? That if somebody says the moon is made of green cheese,
right,
the media, they won't just dismiss it, right? They'll challenge Obama to say, how can you prove the moon is not made of green cheese?
Right, right.
Gingrich says it is, and he wants to build a colony there. So
I just, all right, well, listen, we're about out of time. The name of the book is The Obama Hate Machine by Bill Press. It's subtitled The Lies, Distortions, and Personal Attacks on the President and Who is Behind Them. You've got to, anything that Press writes is worth getting and reading. This is, the publisher is Thomas Dunn Books, part of an imprint of St. Martin's Press. So for heaven's sakes, get this book. And Bill, when I get to D.C. at the end of March, I'll definitely give you a call. We'll get together and have 7 or 20 drinks.
All right. Listen, we're going to party. It's long overdue. We got to catch up.
All right. I hear
Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for your time. Best to you and Kathy.
All right, man. Thank you.
Okay.
Take it easy, Bill. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. This hour is sponsored by our old friend Andrew Schmidt at Hexistore. H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R. Hexistore. S-T-O-R. They're the provider of online backup services. Visit the website, if you would, please. Hexistore.com. Or you can call them 877-236-6472. Hexistore, HEXISTOR.com, Hexistore.com. Visit them for online backup services. I love the story. Our resident, a resident of Oklahoma. I'll get it right. Oh, God. Well, it is Friday night. Jeez. Sheila, who edits at Op-Ed News and is another writer hellraiser on the internets. And Sheila stays in pretty close touch. Back when I used to write, she made sure I got published on Op-Ed News. I just hit a brick wall, a blank wall about 2 years ago and haven't written a thing since. Thank God Kathy continues to write. But anyway, I digress. She sends me this thing tonight. It's a statement from Constance Johnson. She is a representative in the Oklahoma... Or no, she's a senator in the Oklahoma Senate, Constance Johnson. Now, she has written an amendment to Oklahoma Senate Bill 1433. Let me see if I can... share this with you. I think I can. She says, as a woman and a 31-year veteran of the legislative process in Oklahoma, I'm increasingly offended by state law trends that solely focus on a woman's or on a female's role in the reproductive process. With Oklahoma's new, never-before-experienced Republican majority, we are seeing enactment of more and more measures that adversely affect women and their rights to access safe medical procedures when making reproductive health care decisions. My action is to amend the so-called personhood bill introduced by Senator Brian Crane, a Republican of Tulsa, and it represents the culmination of my and many other Oklahomans' frustration regarding the ridiculousness of our reproductive policy initiatives in Oklahoma. I have received overwhelmingly positive responses from men and women in Oklahoma and worldwide. The personhood bill would potentially allow governmental intrusion into families' personal lives by policing what happens to a woman's eggs without any similar thought to what happens to a man's sperm. My amendment seeks to draw attention to the absurdity, duplicity, and lack of balance inherent in the policies of the state in regard to women. Oklahoma already incarcerates more women than any other place in the world. Under this latest provision, a woman in Oklahoma may now face additional criminal charges and potential incarceration for biological functions that produce, or in some cases destroy, eggs or embryos, such as a miscarriage, in vitro fertilization, involving the fertilization outside the womb for implantation into the womb, would also potentially represent a violation of the proposed personhood statute. Finally, the amendment I'm offering seeks to draw humorous attention to the hypocrisy and inconsistency of this proposal. From the Republican perspective of downsized government and less government intrusion into people's private affairs. Despite the great challenges our state faces, it is far more important that we address issues such as affordable health care to help improve our state's ranking of 48th in health status, to create good, secure jobs that grow our economy, and ensure that all citizens have access to quality, affordable education. Now, what do you think her amendment to the so-called personhood bill really was? Huh? It can be referred to as the spilled semen bill. The spilled semen amendment. And I'm not saying anything about Constance Johnson. I'm just saying we live in a crazed religious right. And remember, the religious right people say they're under assault. They are under assault. So what do you think her amendment really is? Can you guess? Huh? Come on. Can you? Well, I gave you a hint. The spilled semen bill or amendment. I keep saying bill. It's amendment. Here it is. This is her amendment. And it adds this language. Any action in which a man ejaculates or otherwise deposits semen anywhere but in a woman's vagina, shall be interpreted and construed as an action against an unborn child. This means, oh God, I can't read what it says here on the Jezebel.com website about this. It is kind of brilliant, though, isn't it? See, the bill that she's trying to amend, the one these Republican caucasoids are trying to do all over the country now, It seeks to define human life as beginning at the moment of conception, before it's even implanted in the womb. And it offers legal, full legal protection to those little multi-celled lumps. In other words, in the words of the bill, quote, the unborn child at every stage of development has all the rights, privileges, and immunities available to other persons, citizens, and residents of this state. Fair enough. Fair enough. So, the amendment offered by State Senator Constance Johnson of Oklahoma City just gets right down to it. Any action in which a man ejaculates or otherwise deposits semen anywhere but in a woman's vagina shall be interpreted and construed as an action against an unborn child. You know what that means, right, boys? No masturbating, no nocturnal emissions, no oral sex, no gay sex.
No rubbing up against little boys on the bus.
Right. No priest humping little boys and little girls. I don't know, man. I think that this ought to be included in the bill. Jeez. Oklahoma, thanks, Sheila. I think. Oh, Lord have mercy. And you tell me, Truth Seeker, that there is not a move by the political and religious right in this country to take women and utterly and absolutely, first of all, deny them protection on the job through organization, you know, working through collective bargaining with the union, or no Family Leave Act, and now they're talking about putting them into combat roles. That makes sense. But completely demonizing women, completely taking away from women their right to do anything except, I guess now, go out on a battlefield and kill for corporate America.
Radio is blasting. Someone's knocking at the door. I'm looking at my girl, but she passed out on the floor. I've seen so many things I ain't never seen before. Don't know what it is. I don't want to see no more. Mama told me not to come.
Ain't the time for your tears in the courtroom of.
He told me he understood exactly how I felt. He said, "Boy, I've been in your shoes once or twice myself."
Yes, you can. It's about 22 past the hour. You gotta love Senator Constance Johnson. After the next break, podcast trivia. So if you want to win a one-year subscription to podcast trivia, I mean a one-year subscription to multi-program podcast downloads commercial-free, now's the time to call in. 877-996-2556 is the number. 877-996-2556. Tales from Uncle Remus. From Prairie 2. Apologies to the author. The part of Br'er Fox will be played by Br'er Rabbit. Br'er Rabbit had a problem. He had been elected to be leader of the Free Forest after defeating grumpy old Br'er Bear and his running mate, Br'er Cuckoo Bird. But lately, it was a hard life in the forest. So Br'er Rabbit set about first thing to fix the healthcare system of the forest. The ideas he was able to get passed by the Critter Congress weren't all that good, but they were a big improvement over letting the predators run the system. They tended to eat the sick, especially the middle-class animals who they hated most awful. The animals running for Brer Rabbit's job came from the predator class and were competing to see who could tell the biggest lies about Brer Rabbit and about rabbit care, a name that was supposed to make the dumber animals in the forest think it was bad. Brer Fox spent a lot of money making the dumb animals dumber. Even Brer Wolf over at Critter News Network, CNN, joined in whenever he could. Mostly, they just didn't like the color of his fur. The contest for the animal that would race to get Brer Rabbit's job was down to just three. Brer Weasel, he had made his money raiding hen houses and restructuring them. Brer Polecat, he liked to cheat on each of the former Ms. Brer Polecats when they got old and sickly. And Brer Rat, he was just a rat in a sweater. One day, Brer Rabbit had an idea. The new health care law was going to require that all the insurance companies provide litter control for all the animals in the forest equally. And he knew some 2% of forest animals really hated the idea, would do anything to stop it. While it was true that employers who provided health insurance had been required to do this for the past 12 years, the predator class wasn't really into history, so they didn't know this. So Brer Rabbit made a baby from a lump of tar. And he told the animals of the forest that this baby would provide litter control free of charge to all animals of the forest, and their employer's insurance would be required to pay for it, even businesses that were owned by churches. This was already the law, but shh, don't say anything. Immediately, Brer Weasel, Brer Polecat, and Brer Rat ran out from the thicket and attacked the tar baby with much hatred. The female animals of the forest weren't very happy about their right to health care being attacked, but the attackers didn't care. They were going to destroy Brer Rabbit once and for all. Then Brer Rabbit came out from the briar patch and announced that the churches wouldn't need to pay for litter control. The insurance companies would pay for it directly, since it actually saved them lots and lots of money by providing preventive care. Then Brer Weasel, Brer Polecat, and Brer Rat looked up and realized they were stuck to the tar baby, and they looked very stupid. The female animals of the forest saw them in a whole new way. Brer Rabbit, he chuckled and hopped down the road to the finish line. PrairieNumeral2.com. Damn, Bruce, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good one. I hope I read it well enough that you all could get it. The Wren House is down here in Atlanta, where those stories originated. Brer Rabbit. But I never heard of Brer Weasel and Brer Rat. But it's appropriate. Oh, my goodness, I like that. I like that. Yeah, I guess you know what Bruce is referring to about, we'll talk about when we come back after the break and after we do podcast trivia, which is coming up next. But this whole issue about this birth control rule, and this is what the dumbasses in media and the dumbasses in the political class and the dumbasses in the electorate seem to just want to ignore. This has been the law for 12 years. It's time, once again, ladies and gentlemen, for a podcast trivia here on the Malloy Program, where if you get the right answer to our multiple-choice question, you will win a one-year subscription to the Malloy Program podcast downloads, commercial-free, in your email or your phone or your razor blade or wherever the hell you want it every morning, all right? Right at the crack of dawn, too. All you have to do is guess the right answer. Paul in Phoenix is first here. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Oh, it's so nice to talk to you. I'm tickled pink here. I was flushing all over.
Way too much information, Paul. Way too much. All right, are you ready to play?
You bet. Let's go for it.
Okay. The Justice Department this week announced a ridiculous so-called settlement with the five major U.S. banks. The settlement involves a massive fraud and deception committed by these banks during the Bush years. And as a result of the so-called settlement, a few hundred thousand defrauded homeowners out of millions are going to get a payment. What is the average amount this payment is expected to be?
That's ridiculous, I'll tell you that.
Is it A, $2,000, B, $200, C, $2.75, or D, a voucher for a free week stay at the nearest Residence Inn?
that's hilarious you should say that, because I can see a Residence Inn from where I am. I'm sitting in Phoenix. I can see one. I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's about 2,000, as sad as that is, as the number A.
You're absolutely right. All right. That is so pathetic.
Isn't that ridiculous? We're talking $100 billion these people got ripped off.
Oh, no, much more than that. The number I've read about in terms of equity that Americans lost in terms of net worth, so many African-American families or Hispanic-American families were just totally wiped out. Their entire net worth that they had in their house, gone. And in some instances, that was their only net worth.
Indeed.
As far as Caucasians are concerned, if you take the whole thing in total, no matter what the race is, no matter what the religion is, that the figure could be $700 billion or up to into the low trillions of dollars that people lost in terms of equity. So
absolutely. That's not surprising at all.
That's
incredible.
You're
right. That number is way closer than mine.
Yeah, so the banking industry, you know, kicking and screaming, have agreed to pay $25 billion. That is a rounding error.
And I hear $5 billion is coming out of their actual pocket. The rest
is going to come from investors or something. I don't know. It's just horrifying. Just horrifying.
I'm very depressed about it. But you know what? I am totally excited about winning a podcast.
Well, I'll tell you what, Paul, hang on. I'm going to put you on hold here. Kathy will get the pertinent information. And thanks so much for playing the game and for winning. Right? Okay. Now, I just want to do this. I don't want to get hung up on this topic. And I mentioned this the other night, but I mentioned during the third hour, and I didn't really get into it, but Mother Jones had a report. Nick Bauman, who's the news editor, Mother Jones, Mojo.com. This so-called controversial pregnancy control rule was already the law during the Bush years, during all eight of the Bush years. The only reason it's created a firestorm of controversy now is because the Catholics, the religious crazy people, the right-wing politicians, this combination of fascism, religious fascism, corporatism, capitalism, they are gunning for this president, and I don't know why. I honestly don't. I just don't get it. But this so-called firestorm of controversy was created out of nothing. The central mandate that most employers have to cover preventive care for women, pregnancy control, has been law for over a decade. And as Nick points out, this fact has been completely lost or ignored in this ridiculous controversy. And despite this long-standing precedent that employers have to cover preventive care for women if they're going to provide insurance. No one screamed until now. Here's the background. In December 2000, a month before this freakish Bush administration took office, in December 2000, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, ruled that companies that provided prescription drugs to their employees but didn't provide birth control were in violation of Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which prevents discrimination on the basis of sex. Now, that opinion in December 2000, which the Bush administration did nothing to alter or withdraw when it took office the next month, is still in effect today. Because it relies on Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, it applies to all employers with 15 or more employees. Now, employers that don't offer prescription coverage or don't offer insurance at all are exempt because they treat men and women equally. But under the EEOC's interpretation of the law, you can't offer other preventive care coverage without offering birth control coverage, too. A former top EEOC official who was involved in the decision told Mother Jones, quote, "It was, we thought at the time, in the year 2000, a fairly straightforward application of Title VII principles. All of these plans," this official went on, "covered Viagra immediately, without thinking. And they were still declining to cover prescription contraceptives. It's a little bit jaw-dropping to see what's going on now. There was some press at the time, but we issued guidances that were far, far more controversial than what's happening now." End quote. Now, after the EEOC opinion was approved in 2000, reproductive rights groups and employees who wanted birth control access sued employers that refused to comply. And the next year, in a court case, a federal court agreed with the EEOC's reasoning. Reproductive rights groups and others used that decision as leverage to force other companies to settle lawsuits and agree to change their insurance plans to include birth control, or as I like to call it, pregnancy control. Some subsequent court decisions echoed the one I'm referencing, and some went the other way. But the rule, absent a Supreme Court decision, remained. And over the following decade, during the Bush crime family, the percentage of employer-based plans offering contraceptive coverage tripled to 90%. It's always been there, at least for the past 12 years. Not even religious employers were exempt from the impact of the EEOC decision. Now, Title VII does allow religious institutions to discriminate on religious grounds, but it doesn't allow them to discriminate on the basis of sex, the kind of discrimination at issue in the EEOC ruling. DePaul University, the largest Roman Catholic university in America. No, it's not Notre Dame. It's DePaul University. Added birth control coverage to its plans after receiving an EEOC complaint several years ago. Do you see? Do you smell the stinking Catholic hierarchy the hypocrisy here? And you wonder why I despise religion. As recently as last year, the EEOC was moderating a dispute between the administrators of Belmont Abbey, a Catholic institution in North Carolina, and several of its employees who had their birth control coverage withdrawn after administrators realized it was being offered. The current freakout, Judy Waxman says, who's Judy Waxman? I don't know, is largely occurring because the EEOC policy isn't as widely known and it hasn't been uniformly enforced. But it's still unclear whether Obama's Health and Human Services Department will enforce the new rule any more harshly than the old one. Well, we know the answer to that because of what happened today. The Obama administration had already given organizations a year-long grace period to comply. And which one of these rotten sons of bitches did I hear addressing CPAC saying that, was it Huckabee? When he said, we're all Catholics now! Somebody said that the offering of a year to comply by the Obama administration was adding insult to injury. Telling a religious, these religious fanatic freaks, wow, we're going to take away your religious freedom and you got a year to adjust to it. Har, har, har. This is just madness. I mean, literally, literally insanity. Literally insanity.
Chance to get along with you. Honey, to the love.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Andrew Schmidt. His company is Hexistor, H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R, Hexistor. It's a provider of online backup services. And you can visit his website, Hexistor.com, or give him a call, 877-236-6472. Hexistor, H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R. Thanks, Andrew. Two new nuclear plant construction has won federal approval. I think was it yesterday? These would be the first to be built in the United States since 1979, since the partial meltdown at Three Mile Island. Guess where they're going to be built? Yeah, right here in Georgia. In the zipper of the Bible Belt, or the buckle of the Bible, of whatever the hell this is. The Southern Company. The Southern Company has been identified time and time and time again as the most prolific polluter in America. The Southern Company. They own Georgia Power and Alabama Power and Florida Power and Electric, I think. A number of power companies in the southeast region, probably out west too. But the number one polluter in the United States is Southern Company. And they have just been handed licenses to build two more nuclear reactors. One is to be projected to begin operating in 2016 and the other one in 2017. I wonder if the Iranians are going to say these are not really being built for nuclear power generation, but they're going to be used to build nuclear. Oh, well, I guess not, since we already have 9,000 nuclear warheads. Tom Fanning, the CEO of Southern Company, says getting these permits was what he calls a major step. He said that at a news conference the other day. He said, quote, the two new units at Plant Vogtle will set a new standard of safety and efficiency in nuclear energy. End quote. Only one member of the five-person U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the chairman, Gregory Jasko, dissented. He said no. He cited safety concerns following the triple meltdown last year at Fukushima Daiichi plant in Japan. Mr. Jasko said, quote, significant safety enhancements have already been recommended as a result of learning the lessons from Fukushima, and there is still more work ahead of us. Knowing this, I cannot support issuing these licenses as if Fukushima never happened, end quote. Now, people in the area, it's near Waynesboro, Georgia, were given what the company calls several opportunities to voice opinions about the environmental impact of the project and whether or not people wanted them. I don't know if most or just a strong minority of people said no. Don't do this. But, of course, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is stacked with people from the nuclear industry, disregarded what the... Of course. What? They're going to say to people in a little jerkwater town in Waynesboro, Georgia, they're going to say to those people, hey, okay, we hear you. We're not going to build them. Please. The people of Waynesboro, Georgia, can go piss up a rope. You are getting two new nuclear reactors. Whether you want them or not, they're coming. If you don't like it, on the one hand, you've got 4 years to move. The other hand, you have 5 years to move. So get your ass out of Waynesboro, Georgia. Get your ass out of the state of Georgia, frankly, and go away if you don't like them. A member of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission during the time of the Three Mile Island crisis said building the new reactors wasn't a reasonable economic decision. His name is Peter Bradford. He told ABCnews.com, quote, the problem has never been construction permits. Investors just don't want to take the risk, end quote. So guess who is going to guarantee the money that's going into the construction of these two behemoths? That's right. You are. I am. Tax dollars. The federal government will guarantee the people who do put money in that they will not lose. And the federal government will handle the insurance so that if this thing cracks open, if there's a meltdown, if there's whatever, the Southern Company will not be sued. Son of a bitch. Just never stops, does it? Two nuclear reactors. Well, I'll tell you what. Down there in Waynesboro, Georgia, where they love a prayer meeting. Oh, hallelujah, they love a prayer meeting. I'll tell you what. You lads and lassies down there in Waynesboro, Georgia, you better get on your knees and start really praying now. I'll tell you that. Yes, indeed. Because you're going to have four nuclear reactors pumping out the poison within the next 4 or 5 years. Yes, indeed. Plant Bogle, they call it. So this should increase the attendance at the local churches down there. Especially some of the Catholic churches. Yeah, they do have Catholic churches in South Georgia. They really do. It's a sight to see. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. Another hour of fun and frivolity on the Molloy program on a Friday night. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. The lines are open if you want to comment on something. 877-996-2556 is the number. We'd like to hear from you tonight. I think. Couple of things here. First of all, this is from The New Scientist. Rising temperatures around the world. You know, there's no, first of all, there's no such thing as global warming. Just remember that. That's what the right wingers tell you. But rising temperatures, there's no such thing as global warming, but rising temperatures around the world are affecting just a whole list of food crops. And according to a new study done by Stanford University scientists, wheat is particularly vulnerable. The researcher looked at 9 years' worth of images captured by the MODIS, Modest Earth Observation Satellite, to analyze the growing season of wheat, and he picked the Ganges Plain of India. What he found was in the years with higher average temperatures, the wheat fields turned brown earlier, meaning they were no longer growing. Oh, okay. Previous studies have predicted that wheat yields would fall by about 30% in places like India by the year 2050, but this researcher thinks that realistic yield losses could be about 50% greater than the existing models are predicting. That's a scary figure because other studies have shown a need for wheat yields to increase by 50%, not decrease by 50%, in order to feed a growing global population. Now, of course, you know, one solution is to start breeding for wheat plants that have bigger roots and are less stressed by drier and warmer conditions, right? Another option is to breed for plants that are slower growing and can be planted earlier in the season, right? That way the wheat could be harvested before the high spring temperatures while retaining this wheat's hardiness. And so scientists are working on these solutions. But either approach will need to have a breakthrough soon to keep up with growing demand and warming temperatures. I mean, the evidence just continues to roll in. Not just climatologists, but agricultural specialists, people involved in trying, who usually work for governments or NGOs, trying to figure out, okay, we have X amount of population. The projections are our population will grow by X amount by the year X. How are we going to feed this increase in population? But the right wingers tell you, nah, God wouldn't let something like that happen. Don't worry about it. Nah, everything's okay. I hate to even talk any further about the birth control or pregnancy control hog snot that the right wing psychopaths in this country. You know the problem here. Part of the problem, the Catholic Church realizes that it is about as effective as a major factor in interpersonal relations in this country. It's just declining. Its influence is going completely away. And part of the reason, of course, is its own perfidy, its own criminal activity, its own hideous attacks on children, and then the cover-ups by the church hierarchy. Did all these bishops and the Pope molest and bugger little children? No, of course not. What they did was almost worse. They covered it up. They hid it. They exposed ever more children to these pedophilic monsters. So the Catholic Church, the institutional Catholic Church, is please, please, please let me be right on this, dying. Now, the number of Catholics or actual practicing Catholics, I don't know what that number is. I do believe that when someone is inculcated with this monstrous nonsense from their early childhood, it's difficult, if not impossible, to ever escape from it. The Catholics have a way of just nailing you to the, I was going to say cross, nailing you to the ground. You cannot shake off their dogma unless you just, I mean, set your mind to it like I don't know, like trying to push against the Empire State Building and move it just a centimeter. But the church hierarchy is understanding, you know, when you have numbers like 98% of Catholic women, or 78%, or 58%, I don't give a damn what it is. If it's 2%, that's a failure. You know, this percentage, this high percentage of Catholic women who use birth control, regardless of what the church says, then the church has failed as an institution. It has simply failed. When you have a church that, in the plus column, rails against predatory capitalism, but is itself a predatory capitalist organization. Just look at it. I mean, just look at its wealth. Look at where it gets its wealth. Look how it insists on tithing by people who can't even goddamn feed themselves. Oh, I'm screaming. I'm sorry. So when you have people starting to come out of the ether and realize, wait a second, I don't need the institutional church. I don't need that. As a matter of fact, Jesus told his followers, get the hell out of the church. Well, he didn't call them churches, but get the hell out of the synagogues, out of the temples. Get out of there. You don't need that. That's corrupt. I mean, he said that 2,000 years ago, right? And he went on to say, according to people who wrote about him, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there is my church. But modern Christians, especially in this country, have so demolished and perverted and urinated on anything and everything that their Messiah ever told them was the way, the truth, and the life, to render the whole thing meaningless. But this is why the church, the Catholic Church, has gotten its robes in such a wad. Because I think they're starting to realize that slowly but surely people are starting to come to the point they don't give a damn when the smoke turns white, when there's a new pope elected. They don't care. They don't give a damn. What they want, what a lot of Catholics want is some kind of spiritual release from just the everyday crush of living. So they turn to something that is not going to give it to them, the institutional church, and settle for whatever the church will offer. And you can say this, as far as I'm concerned, about any religion. But the church is the one. You don't hear, do you? Do you hear a lot of Protestants out there screaming about this? Do you hear a lot of Jews? Where are the Hindus and the Muslims on this issue in the United States? Why is it primarily Catholics and then the opportunists, the rats, the real vermin in the evangelical church who jump on the bandwagon and start screaming along with the Catholics? I mean, this is the Catholic institutional Catholics. This is madness, and I think it's because the church realized that it is totally irrelevant. Nobody gives a damn about the church anymore. They may believe in what they were taught and what was pounded and rammed and beat into their heads about the Catholic version of Christianity. But how do you respect an institution who has as one of its organizing principles the protection of adult males who anally penetrate little boys and little girls? I mean, how do you do that?
be gone. You're the reason I'm a-traveling on.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Don't want no secret agent. 21 past the hour. I just want that story to go away. I really do. This nonsense. I just want it to go away. To your phone calls. John is in Washington, D.C., listening on XM. Hello, John.
Yes, hi. And, you know, first of all, I'd just like to tell you, you know, I listen to your show. And, you know, I mean, I agree with you on some things, and I disagree with you very strongly right now on what you basically have done to a lot of people that believe in a church, and I am a Catholic, so I'll just throw that right out there to you. And you bring up, you know, like most people, and you know what, Mike? We probably have the same ancestry, probably a little emerald in color, and most of the people I know, Maine Malloy, are Catholic. And I'm just curious, I'd love to ask you this question. Were you a Catholic at one point in your life?
No.
You just seem so down on this church.
I am. I mean, how can I not be? This is a church that over the 2,000-year history, its 2,000-year history, has butchered, slaughtered, murdered, exiled, excommunicated, condemned to hell hundreds of thousands, millions of people. Do you realize the Catholic Church burned at the stake millions of women in Europe in the Middle Ages because they considered them to be witches? Do you understand?
Right,
wait a minute. No. You brought this up, pal. You brought this up. You said that I'm doing damage. The Catholic Church is a nest of pedophiles. I said the institutional church. I also say on this program, apparently you're not a regular listener, how much respect I have for certain Catholics who put their lives on the line for social justice. The Catholic Church itself is a terrible institution. Individual Catholics who do good, whether it is demonstrating against School of the Americas or demonstrating allowing themselves to be locked up because they protest nuclear weapons. That's something else again. But you show me a pope who will get out there and demonstrate against the School of the Americas. The Catholic Church is corrupt. It is absolutely corrupt.
All right, Mike, now may I respond to a couple of...
Well, sure. Go ahead.
Sure. When you talk about millions of women that were burned to the stake, I think you're exaggerating slightly.
Now listen, John, I'm not going to have a conversation with somebody who doesn't understand the history of his own organization. I'm sorry. I'm not here to educate you. You're the Catholic, not me. If you don't understand the violent, murderous history of your own church, then listen, pal, you're going to have to chat with somebody else. I just don't have the patience for this. I'm not going to educate you about the atrocities committed by your own church. I'm not going to do it. So I appreciate your call. I hope you continue to listen, but I'm not going to get involved in this conversation. Thanks for checking in.
And if it wasn't millions of women burned at the stake, it was certainly hundreds of thousands of peoples all over the world who were tortured and killed if they didn't convert when the Catholic conquerors landed.
Oh yeah, the disease, the imperialism. I mean, you know, like I say, I've tried to make it clear when I go off on these tirades about the state of Israel, for example, that I'm not attacking Judaism per se on that level. I think all religion is a bunch of garbage. I really do. When I talk about the Catholic Church as being an institution who has as one of its organizing principles the protection of people who anally violate children. I mean, do you think I'm making that up? For Christ's sake, John, do you not read the paper? Are you not aware of the atrocities committed by your own church? Are you not aware of the hundreds hundreds of millions of dollars that have been paid out to try to satisfy claims of sexual abuse that goes back for decades? Are you not aware that the government of Ireland withdrew their ambassador from Vatican City because they've had enough of this goddamn crap? Are you not aware of that? Don't come to this program and ask me to educate you about your own church. That's ridiculous. If you don't know these issues and you don't want to know them, that's one thing. But if you don't know them and refuse to hear the truth, that's something else again. And you can get the truth, not from this show. We're not about educating people. So don't come here and tell me that I'm wrong about millions of women burned at the stake over the course of about 300 years. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. And on that particular subject, I do, because I've read the history. We'll be back in a minute.
I ask for Providence to smile upon me with his sweet face. But I'll tell you, my place is over the sun, and this place is over dark. I do not feel the romance, I do not catch the spark. My place is over the dark, of darkness any longer.
Hey there,
here's you something.
The world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about
25 before the hour.
Just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the world's about? Because I don't understand.
I don't know. You know, there's a part of me that feels like I owe John an apology. A part of me, I said. It's difficult, if not impossible, for me to get into a one-on-one discussion with somebody who is a believer in his or her faith, because that person has never challenged the faith and doesn't know that particular religion, or not faith, but religion, the religion's history. And, you know, when historical facts are cited as historical facts. You know, I'm not talking about walking on water and feeding the multitudes with loaves and fishes. I mean, if people want to believe those stories, that's fine. That's part of, excuse me, that's part of the religious mythology that's necessary to support it. Just like the religious mythology around any god system, whether Greek, Roman, Shinto, Confucian, you know, every religious system, Native American, it all has these stories that are used for whatever purpose, primarily to solidify the religious beliefs inside the person being told the stories. You know, if you're being told that somebody can walk on water, I mean, whoa, you know, that gets your attention real quick, doesn't it? Now, even though that story might have been told in a metaphorical sense back when it was told, or even if it has been determined that such a thing is physically impossible, and therefore has become metaphor, it doesn't make any difference if a person starts to believe the stories and refuses to take a look at the reality of the institution. Then I have no business having a discussion with that person. And in fact, that's what I was trying to tell John. I cannot educate you about the history of your own religious institution. First of all, it's not my place to do that. And secondly, it is your responsibility, if you're going to believe a certain way, if you're going to say this is the way, this is the only way, and most religions would tell you that, any deviation from this way, and you condemn your immortal soul. Any deviation, and you will die for eternity. So when you're up against that, when you're an atheist, when you don't believe this stuff, and you are up against that, what the hell are you supposed to do? I can't sit here and go through, it would take decades to go through the atrocities that have been committed by the Church of Rome. And I think everybody understands that. And I've said before, this is not a condemnation of individuals who subscribe to the Catholic faith and try to find the good in the Catholic faith. I maintain that they're finding the good inside themselves. They don't need any faith. Hindu or Buddhist or Catholic or Jewish or whatever. Good people are good people. I mean, you figure that out. So to the extent that I'm trying to respond to that part of me that says I might owe John an apology, I apologize for the hammer that I use in that kind of stuff. And, you know, because it's kind of not fair. I understand that. I do get that. So the whole thing creeps me out. I watch what happens. About what almost every, you've heard me talk about this a million times, the people of the book, the Jews, the Muslims, and the Christians, how they just continue. They always have, they always will, in their brutal treatment of women, and in most instances, their brutal treatment of children. These are male-dominated, male-oriented, male-created, male-inspired, male-dominant organizations. And they demonstrate that constantly. Paula is in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hi, Paula. I haven't heard from you for a while.
Don't even consider thinking that you owe that guy an apology. Because it's not... You didn't do... All you did was state the truth.
Well, yeah, but I've had people tell me the truth sometimes about things, and it feels like they just kicked me in the solar plexus. So
no, but it's you know what's weird? It's these discussions. It takes on a whole. It goes to a whole new level when you're dealing with Catholics. I was raised in the Catholic tradition, so I know it just gets in your head in such a way that it is really hard to separate yourself from it. Especially if you were a man.
Yeah.
Because if you're a man, Catholicism is wonderful.
Yeah, right.
It's no, like, there's no problem. It's so easy to be a male and be Catholic.
Yeah, I can see where that would be.
Straight man. Yeah. A straight man. I need to amend that a little bit. A straight man and be Catholic.
Well, that's true too.
If you are a woman. And or a gay man, you kind of, it's, the blinders fall off much easier.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it gets into your head. And it's not even like, but you're not, it's the structure of the church, too. Where it's the hierarchical, you know, top-down thing where good people just kind of stick with it because that's, you know, it's how they were raised. It's what they do. It's what they know. And they can't separate themselves from it. I know my whole family is kind of in that. I'm an atheist. But if you know, my siblings haven't been to church in years, but if you ask them, they would identify as Catholic.
Right.
They can't separate themselves from it.
And it's, and you know, I have to make the point, which is probably not necessary. Look at the way the Muslims, the real fundamentalist Muslims, treat women. They dress them so the only thing that is allowed to be seen are the slits of their eyes. Look at what's happening in Israel with the ultra-Orthodox Jews who say,
oh, the Haredi?
Yeah, who say to women, you can't even, forget the back of the bus, you can't ride on the bus.
There's a whole town in New York.
This constant, I don't want to come across like some raving feminist, but I will tell you this, that I understand viscerally that if there was a freeing up of a female, a power, you call it femininity, and I don't mean it in the sense of, oh, let's all faint and have roses around the room. I'm talking about feminine power. I think the planet would be a lot easier, to deal with. I think there would be more of an interest in saving the planet. This is Mother Earth. I never call it Father Earth, and there's a reason for that. And it's the abrogation of female power. It's the denying, female power that has intrigued me. And I guess it's because I grew up in a family that had a very strong mother who dealt with all kinds of crap in her married life and raising us four kids. I had a very strong grandmother who had a fourth grade education. She was an immigrant. And these are the two women in my life who showed me that you have to be strong. You have to use your power, and you have to never, 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 never give an inch or the bastards will take a mile. And it just stuck with me. You talk about being raised Catholic. When you're raised by women who show you, not sit down and tell you, but who show you by the way they live their lives what strength really is, that sticks.
Well, and the thing is, I was raised with my mother, you know, I wasn't afraid of my father when I did something wrong. It was Mom who handled the discipline in our house.
Mm-hmm.
It was it was the same thing here, but it's just, you know, I don't know. It's just, there is still the sense that, you know, women have one purpose and one purpose only.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be, and it's like the whole Catholic and other faiths, like you, I don't know how, I'm Italian and Irish, just like you are.
Right.
And I don't know how the hell you got out of that whole Catholic thing with that, you know, ethnic background. Do you realize how lucky you are?
A lot of people, when I tell them I'm Irish and a Catholic, and my parents and grandparents, or not my parents, but my grandparents were immigrants, they just look at me and say, "What? You weren't Catholic?"
You know. I mean, but do you realize how fortunate, like the
wait, Kathy wants to, what, Kathy?
Yeah, I just want to say, Paul, he didn't get off that easy. He was raised a Southern Baptist.
Well, I wasn't raised.
I don't think that gets in your head, though, the same way.
No, it doesn't. I wasn't raised as a Southern Baptist, but my grandmother happened to be one. And while she was powerful and strong and able to take care of things that needed to be taken care of, she was what I would call today part of the religious right. She wasn't a bully about it, but she was very strong in her belief. And,
she beat you with a stick.
Well, that
she
was...
She literally beat you with a stick.
But that
literally.
That had nothing to do with religion. That was discipline for wandering off their farm. Hey, I got to leave it there, Paula. Thank you. Thanks.
Have a good weekend, Mike.
Thanks for the defense. Take care. We'll be right back. My grandmother used to, what she used to do, it was just the old way. she, if I misbehaved, it had nothing to do with religion. And I want to clear this up because I don't think Kathy meant to imply that it had anything to do with religion. But my grandmother had a couple of rules. I would spend my summers at, and it wasn't really a farm. I said farm, but it seemed like a farm to me at the time. They had an enormous garden. They had an enormous fruit orchard. They had chickens. I can remember watching the chickens get their heads cut off of my grandfather with his knife. You know, he was Italian, so of course he carried a knife, right? But my grandmother had a couple of rules, and not many, only two or three. And if you violated the, one of the rules was never to leave the property. You know, she was, she took care of me in the summer. But, you know, she was an older woman. She wasn't nimble. She couldn't keep up with a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old. So the rules are very simple. You can play in the orchard. You can play in the field. You can play in the garden. You can do any, whatever you want to do. Climb the trees, play with the dog. But don't leave the property. And if I did, and I think I only did twice in the entire time that I used to spend summers with her, then the punishment. She would hand me a paring knife and direct me to a lilac bush that stood behind the house. And she would say, go cut the switch. Well, the first time I ever had to do that, I brought in one that was about the diameter of a, I don't know, a string. And she threw that aside and went out and cut one herself. Well, I learned very quickly to, you know, get one that was not going to be as thick as Grandma would cut, but no more string switches. It had to be one that, you know, had some heft to it. So sure enough, and her means of discipline was very simple. She would take hold of the back of my neck and whap, whap, whap across my legs, my blue jean covered legs with that switch. Now, I watched it. My uncle at the time, my uncle was only 8 years older than me. And he was in high school, and he played football. He was a offensive tackle in high school football, to give you an idea of his size. And I can remember seeing my grandmother, when he was a junior in high school, reach up and get him by the back of the neck and take that switch. Whap, whap, whap. I don't know what the hell he did. Maybe stayed out too late or didn't do his homework. But this was her way of disciplining. Now, I hated that. You know, no kid wants to get switched, for God's sake. And, of course, we don't do that anymore, do we? Not unless we're Christian fundamentalists. But my grandmother didn't, you know, it wasn't spare the rod, spoil the child. It was the culture that she came from. If a child misbehaves, this is what you do. You don't sit down with a kid and use logic or reason or principles of psychology or positive reinforcement. You take a switch and smack the little bastard. And that's how the child learns. And it just so happened that I and my cousins and my uncle, my younger uncle, that we were the little bastards if we did something that violated Grandma's rules. So it was very simple. But it had nothing to do with... there was only one sort of religious thing that you could get switched for. And that was if Grandma took you to church and you, what she used to call, acted up. God have mercy on your soul when you got home. It's very simple. Ah... Go cut the switch. Ah! Paul is in Martinez, California. Hello, Paul.
Hi.
Hey.
I have a suggestion. Your caller, John, who
yes.
Doesn't know a lot about the history of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion for a book that he could read. It's called Constantine Sword. It's written by James Carroll, who was a one-time priest.
Mm-hmm. I think I know his name, but I haven't heard of that book, I don't think.
Right. And there's also a movie based on the book. So if he's, you know, truly interested in finding out more about, or, you know, an alternative history of the church, then that's a way to proceed.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. There, you know, the point that I made to him about all the women that were burned at the stake, there is a Bridget just sent me an email. There's a 1990 Canadian documentary entitled The Burning Times. And it's an account of the early modern European witchcraft trials. And you can get information about this on Wikipedia. Just look up The Burning Times. And the film says there were 9 million women burned at the stake. There have been some disputes about those numbers, but if you add in drowning, which was another way to determine if a woman was a witch, you add in the Crusades, of course, those only killed Muslim women and children and men. If you add all that in, you come up with these horrific totals of people who were burned at the stake, who were tortured to death, who were impaled on spears and wooden stakes simply because they did not follow the teachings of the Roman Church. And to a lot of them, they didn't know what the teachings were. They were butchered for their ignorance, not butchered for their refusal in so many instances. So, I mean, I have absolutely no respect for or sympathy for the institutional Catholic Church. Zero. It has been an instrument of death and torture and rape and mutilation ever since it's been around. And at the same time, like I've said, I can appreciate the efforts of individual Catholics, individual Jews, individual Muslims, Hindus, Zoroastrians, whirling dervishes, and maybe even a Baptist or two. I'll see you Monday. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.
This is my